it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPod11 on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Will Parkinson NFL on YouTube, Badlands, TOJ Talks, a million different things here. We are, you know, about 24, 48 hours removed from the NFL draft. Kind of get a deep breath now. There was no mock draft Mondays yesterday. I felt like a cleanse throughout my body. It was a day for sure. I'm going to recap it here. No better person to have on, hop on in than Sam Monson of PFF. PFF NFL pod, million other things of PFF. Sam, how are we doing today, man?
Good. How about you? We've still got this week. There's still the draft recap, right? It's still one more week of hectic, and then next week is when we get to exhale for a bit.
Yeah, one more week of draft grades and way too early 2025 mocks and et cetera. And I guess we'll kind of dive in a little bit in depth into each pick and things of that nature. But just general feeling around the Jets draft. I think this was one of the first years in a while for the Jets where not a ton of needs. Obviously, still a bunch. You can always get better at certain spots, whether it's depth or potentially a starter. But it just felt like we weren't sure, were they going to go receiver and trade up, which we know they tried to do. Weren't able to. Were they going to go offensive line, Brock Bowers, a million different things. What'd you just make of the weekend as a whole for the Jets? And then we can kind of dive in more specifically.
Yeah, I think it was solid. PFF gave the Jets draft an A. And I think you're right. They could have gone in a number of different directions. And it was all, they're in a tough spot because they're like the most win now team in the NFL because of Aaron Rodgers, right? They're in this unique situation where they gave everything for the quarterback at the end of his career and it lasted four snaps and then it just got taken away from them, right? And now it's all on this year. So you're sort of like, well, what is the thing that makes the most difference for just 17 games or hopefully more once they get into the postseason? But like next year, the year beyond almost doesn't matter for them, in a way that just doesn't, it's not the same for any other team. So that's interesting because guys like Brock Bowers, okay, he's a once in a lifetime tight end potentially, but generally speaking, tight ends don't make a huge difference when it comes to year one, right? The rookie transition year isn't usually great for tight ends. Okay, Sam Laporta was great last year, but it's a real outlier in terms of immediate impact from tight ends. So that's where you get that idea of, well, let's go get, one of the big three wide receivers, because those guys could make a big difference year one. So if you can't get that done, I think Fashanu is actually a really smart place to invest that pick. Number one, his pass protection skills might be the best of not just this draft class, but like one of the best we've seen come along in years. The player that he reminded me of actually in terms of footwork and just that ease of movement was Tyron Smith. So for him to go and be Tyron Smith's backup now, and let's face it, the last time Tyron Smith made it through a full season, I think it was 2016. So he's going to play this year. We just don't know how much. So for him to go there behind Tyron Smith, learn from him a bit, and be able to step in for three, four, five, who knows how many games, if and when Tyron Smith goes down, is a great fit. And actually, it's one of the sort of few areas where it does address an immediate need, right? It's cover, it's insurance for Tyron Smith. But it's also a long-term play, right? Tyron Smith's clearly not a long-term option. So Fashanu at some point is going to replace him and hopefully be the left tackle of the next 10 years. So I think it was a really smart place to spend that first pick, particularly if, you try to get the wide receiver and that doesn't come off. To me, this is the next best place to go.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Something that, a lot of Jets fans, I think initially when they see the pick, right, you're, oh my God, last year we take Will McDonald, he barely played, now we're going to take another guy who's barely going to play. Who's to say that that Olu can't go into camp and beat out Morgan Moses for right tackle? Like, is anyone sure. Like, is that not a realistic thing, right? Or, Tyron Smith, obviously, I don't know, maybe the Jets get into camp, and I'm not advocating for this, but maybe they get into camp and say, hey, we're going to play the best five, and Olu can slide in at left guard. I know he never played left guard, but Rodgers kind of weirdly hinted at that right after the draft, and it's like, maybe they just play the best five, and it's like, oh, wow, Tippmann, AVT, Olu, Tyron Smith, and Morgan Moses is like a really, really good unit. And then, you know, this is 12 months removed from like, holy shit, this unit sucks. So, it's something that he's going to play, whether he's playing at left tackle, replacing Tyron Smith, right tackle. Morgan Moses is on a one-year, $5 million deal, and he's coming off a torn pec. Like, it's not as if, other than AVT, I think Tippmann and Tyron Smith, nobody's locked in. I don't think Simpson or Moses are locked in long-term to those roles. You know what I mean? I can understand if you're like disappointed they didn't get the playmaker, but for me, he was the best pass protector in the draft, and he's going to play this year, probably like 6 or 7 games. Like it's just a reality at a minimum. And I think being that good pass pro ready is a little bit better than the heavy run blocking guy that comes in and like a Fuaga potentially, or, you know, even I think back to Becton where like, you know, it was really fun to watch him in the run game, the pass pro stuff week by week, you really didn't know what you were getting. And that's a little dicey as a rookie tackle.
Yeah, like it's a different thing than Will McDonald, right? He was only ever going to be a situational guy, and he wasn't able to carve much of a role for himself in that regard. Like, Fashanu is going to play, we just don't know how much, right? But when he plays, he'll be playing the whole game, right? Tyron Smith is going to miss time. It's almost impossible for him to just, you know, flick a switch and suddenly he's not going to get hurt again. He's been hurt every single year since 2015 or 16, whichever one it was. So we just don't know how many games he's going to miss. But that could be, you know, 2 games, and they could be the playoff games, right? He makes it through the whole season. We get 2 playoff games. Now Fashanu's in, and he's your left tackle for the duration of the postseason. So he's going to have an important role. But it could also be like week 3, Tyron Smith hurts his ankle, and Fashanu's right out there, and you basically are playing him for the entire season. So I don't think that is a concern at all. Like, oh, he's not going to play too much. It's, you know, it's a pick that's going to make no impact. He's going to have a major role in this season. We just don't know how big one it is yet until we, you know, until Tyron Smith gets the injury that's going to make him miss some time. So I have no issues with that. I think you see that as a good thing because, look, his footwork is amazing. He's got a couple of technique things to clean up in terms of pass protection. So use that time where he is a backup, he is, you know, on the bench, he is on the sideline, use that time to work on that stuff so that when he does get called, he's a better player than he is right now. And it's an even, you know, it's an even better scenario. I think it's a great fit, not just for the Jets, but it's a great fit for Fashanu because he can, you know, work on that stuff for a little bit before he gets thrown to the fire.
And one other thing, you know, I talked a little bit about on Sunday night, but Tyron Smith doesn't practice. So every week he's going to be sitting there. I was like, you are going to follow Tyron Smith wherever he goes. You're going to watch the way he works out, watch the way he eats, watch the way he watches film, his technique, et cetera. And like, he's not going to practice. If he practices more than 10 times in camp, like I'll be shocked. But, and it's not because he doesn't want to practice. It's because this is what you do when you're a first ballot Hall of Famer and your body's getting older. He prioritized Sundays and Thursdays and Saturdays and Mondays and the fact the NFL plays every day of the week now. But Tyron Smith's, Fashion is going to be able to play, practice, you know, get first team reps next. And like, this isn't just a this year move, because I do think it helps them this year. It raises their floor to me, because I think one of the biggest concerns with the Jets going into the year, other than Rodgers, obviously, just in terms of, you just don't know what he's going to look like with the Jets. We've seen 2 preseason series and 4 plays. It was, oh my God, like, I like the additions. Tyron Smith's awesome, but if he misses time, does this team all of a sudden have problems at O-line again? I don't, with the way they've addressed this offseason, I think that's much less of a concern. And going forward, you know, Garrett Wilson, if Rodgers retired next year, which I think he's going to play 2 years, but let's just, for the sake of argument, say he only played 1 year, at least a young quarterback or any other quarterbacks coming into 24-year-old AVT, 21-year-old Fashanu, 22-year-old Tip, or 23-year-old Tippmann, Breece, Wilson, Malachi Corley, which we'll get to. It's not as if the situation's bad post-Rodgers now, which I think it was some of the concern. And I wanted to hit on Corley a little bit because, you know, I think he's a really fun player. I think the expectation should be more so of like kind of younger Randall Cobb and Cordell Patterson and those type of guys. Then I don't want to go full Debo yet, just because I think you're setting an expectation he's going to be an all-pro level receiver, and he very well might be. I don't know. But I think he's really exciting. I think he's a perfect Rodgers at this point in his career. Loves to, like, get the ball out of his hands quickly, mitigate some of the pass rush and things like that. And Corley's going to make guys miss, and he's going to run people over. He's not 5'11", 175. He's like a thick 205-pound dude. What did you think of the Corley pick? I thought getting the two picks from Minnesota for basically just getting the same guy and then getting Corley was like, all right, back-to-back, the two probably biggest needs on the roster, especially depth-wise, were receiver and offensive line. They get both those done, and they got a different profile receiver than a Garrett Wilson or a Mike Williams.
Yeah, and that I think is the key. Like, I'm with you. I think he's been comped a lot to Debo. He got comped to Anquan Boldin as well, which I always thought was a bit ridiculous. Like, I don't...
Wasn't Anquan Boldin like 6'1 or 6'2? Or am I making that up in my head?
No, he was big.
Yeah, he was like a big guy.
Like, Corley has this weird-looking body. I was trying to work it out for a while when I got to his tape. I honestly think... It's just, he's got a strange body shape. He's all torso. And I think that makes him look way bigger than he actually is. And he does have some of that, you know, he's a real run after the catch guy. The offense was all screens. They were just getting the ball into his hands and letting him truck people. So that's where you start getting that comp, right? The Anquan Boldin, look at him, just people bounce off him, and the Debo Samuel stuff. I think the Debo thing was always kind of ridiculous. I was always a bit lower on quality than other people, but if you simply put the word light at the end of Debo, I think that makes some sense because it's a stylistic thing, right? And that the point you made is the right one, which is he's bringing something different to this receiving core that's already pretty good. You know, they added, like, obviously Garrett Wilson is a superstar. Mike Williams is a really good addition to this group. And actually, I think a nice sort of buy low type of player. Like, we think of Mike Williams as this permanent sick note guy that's always missing and never playing. He actually hasn't missed that much time. It's just he missed almost all of last year. So it's like,
he just gives you a heart attack. He's just on the injury report, but always plays type of guy.
But also because it was like the last thing was the most, you know, the biggest amount of time we saw him miss. It's like, he's always hurt. You know, he's never going to be on the field for you. It's like, he probably is. Just last year was bad. But Corley brings something that isn't there with the rest of that receiving corps. It's a totally different skill set. So you can get him into the offense. You can sort of add him into the system without disrupting anything else, without taking playing time away, without removing targets. And I think I'm always a fan of teams identifying a skill set that isn't there currently in the receiving core, and then finding a guy that brings that to the table, right? Even if that's all they bring to the table, that isn't there right now. And that gives us an extra string to our bow, you know, an extra club in the bag, and gives us something that we can break out that we didn't have previously. So from that perspective, I think it was really good. And as long as we don't get carried away by comping him to Debo and Anquan Boldin and all these crazy people, I think it makes sense. If you simply say he's Debo light, he fills that role within the offense, then it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, look, I think the Jets are in a good spot too, because Breece Hall gets so many touches out of the backfield. Last year, he was, you know, awesome. I think out of the backfield, that was actually probably where he saw the most success, just because of the way the offensive line and Zach Wilson, these other things. You know, getting, you know, Breece Hall and Malachi Corley in the flats, getting the ball out of Rodgers' hands quickly eliminates him from getting hit at all. Even if the offensive line's awesome, it's just, it screams to these other things. The one thing I'm interested to see with Corley, and I think we'll see this more in camp and things like that, is his route tree actually limited, or is it just the way he was used? Because, you know what I mean? Like, we just, these are guys where you're kind of projecting a little bit. It's even, obviously, it's the opposite of Brian Thomas, where it's like, is Brian Thomas actually, can he run a really good route tree? Or is it just because LSU was like, you're going to run post, go balls and slants, and like everything else, like, we're not giving you the ball. Like, I'm curious to see some of these guys in this class. Most of the, you know, the top three are much more polished, but after that, it's a lot of guys of like, you can do this really well. We don't really know about this. And sometimes it's athletically limited. Sometimes it's like size-wise, whatever. Corley, I'll be curious to see, is he going to turn into this really big-time demon slot guy, or is he going to be more of your gadget, handoffs, you know, sweeps, you know, screens, etc. Day three for the Jets was a little weird. I felt like I liked some of what they did. I thought the Travis pick, to me, it was going to be him or Pratt. I felt like that's a no-brainer. The Jets needed to be a team that can develop even just a backup quarterback that's on your roster for four years that makes like $850,000. And not have to pay a Tyrod. As much as I like Tyrod, like, you don't want to have to pay your backup quarterback $7 million. I like the Braylon Allen pick. I thought his 2021 and 22 tape is really good. Last year, not so much, but he's 20 years old. And like, again, different skill set than Breece Hall or Izzy Abanikanda. Two running backs to me back to back after trading a million times on in the fourth round just felt like, hey, you knew you were trading JFM. That deal was done days prior. Why not go draft a big edge to kind of replace him or offensive line depth or another pass catcher? Because like Alan Lazard's not going to be here in a year and Mike Williams is on a 1 year deal. Like, take another pass catcher, take a safety, another corner. I just felt like maybe Isaiah Davis is awesome. And maybe like I'm being a dick right now, but I just felt like you already took one running back and you take kind of a similar style player again after like you trade that three times in the fourth round. One of them, I'm going on a rant, but one of them was crazy that they dropped like 20 or 15 or 20 spots in the beginning of round four and get a six round pick back and then drop six picks at the end of round four and get a future third. Like, why not have just picked up all future picks? Because you know, if the Raiders start 2-4, the Davante Adams for 2-3s is going to start to get it, you know, going to come up again. So did you get their day three at all? I felt like some good, some was like a little perplexing, you know, even the classic 25-year-old safety at the end of the draft.
Yeah, it was definitely a little bit weird. So I'm the opposite to you. I didn't like the Braylon Allen pick. I've been lower on Braylon Allen all the way through the process than most people. I just don't see it with him. He's got obviously the size, he's got strength, and really his biggest selling point is his age, right? He's incredibly young and he's been doing this for a while already. So if you think there's development to be done there, then sure. I just don't see, like, to me, he's one of the least explosive athletes I can remember on tape. I've told this before, and it's not hyperbole and it's not like a story. When I put on his tape, I don't even remember who I was watching before, but I was going through running backs and I put on Braylon Allen's tape. I genuinely checked to see if there wasn't a glitch in the video player that it was showing it to me at like 0.8 speed or something. Like, what, there wasn't something wrong with the player. He felt so slow relative to everybody else. And okay, you can get that done if you're like Derrick Henry, you know, looks like that sometimes, this sort of slow build up speed. But two things. Number one, Derrick Henry knows that and he knows how to play around it, right? And he takes those angles so that he can get going and then trucks people. Number two, if you've seen those two guys standing next to each other, like, he's not Derrick Henry. Like, Derrick Henry is a different level of human being, even relative to a huge dude like Braylon Allen. So you think Braylon Allen's big, but next to Derrick Henry, he's not. So if that's what we're aiming for, that's not what we're getting here. And I don't think he plays like he's, you know, a big power back. He tries to.
I was just going to say, that's the outside. Biggest criticism of him is like, you're 235, like run like you're 235, yeah, not like you're 205.
I actually think like his best attribute is all the side to side stuff. And that's just not going to fly at 235 pounds in the NFL. The athletes are too good. You can't play like that. If you're 235 in the NFL, you had better play like you're 235, which means find the crease, head right at it, and don't screw around. And from that point of view, I actually think Isaiah Davis is a way better running back. Like, he understands what he is and he plays like it. And you know, he's got some of the same things. He's got like a sort of slow lumbering, you know, it's not explosive, but he gets it and he goes right for the gap and people bounce off that dude. So I actually think Davis was the better back, and I don't mind doubling up as a general concept, even if it, you know, does like only one of them, there's only space for one of them likely, right? But generally speaking, I don't think doubling up at a position is a bad idea because everybody sucks at this, right? The chances are one of those guys is not going to be good and it might not be the one you think it is, right? So
yeah.
Anytime you're just maximizing your chances that one of them sticks, I think is a reasonable approach. But that's also a reason, as you said, right, to draft another wide receiver or draft something else.
Yeah,
right?
Like, I'd rather just double down at a position of like really high value where like, hey, odds one of Corley or I don't know, Trevon Baker hits. It's like,
right.
Hey, like maybe both hit and we're the Rams, or maybe they both suck like the Jets when they drafted our Darius Stewart and Chad Hansen back to back. And it's like, you know what? At least you tried at receiver twice. That's why like the Travis pick to me, like, yeah, you're set at your quarterback room set for at least this year and next year. But like, hey, maybe Travis never plays a snap in the NFL because his leg never fully recovers and whatever, but maybe he's a really solid spot starter backup, you know, in the NFL. And like you, that's a win on day three. If you like Davis, then why take Allen? Or if you liked Allen, why take it? It just felt like Davis doesn't play specials, and I doubt Braylon Allen's going to play specials. So there's just the value there is going to have to be literally at running back, and you have probably one of the three or four best running backs. I would have rather like go sign Zeke and have him be your five carry and pass pro guy a game. And I don't know. I mean, I guess it's probably harsh because it's like a day three dart throw and the round five, right. But they traded back so much that it was like, I want to see you get some value here because the good organizations hit on guys on day three, and the Jets have like some of their most fun players. You know, it was Bryce Huff, obviously. It was, you know, JFM was a waiver guy, but again, a day three pick, and Michael Carter the second. Like, those are the guys you're like, all right, like, this is great value. They're on cheap deals and playing at really high levels at the position. I don't know. I guess that was my frustration with this draft overall. It's just like day three tried to get cute, it felt like, and it was like, just stick to the board. Like, don't go crazy here.
Yeah, I definitely, like, I don't hate the idea of doubling up at any position. I think it's generally smart drafting, but I agree with you. Like, I would double up at a different position simply because, you know, number one, the first running back is already well covered, and it's not as clear as wide receiver, where there's a role for everybody, right? Particularly with a guy like Breece Hall, who can be a complete running back, a bell cow, do everything. It's a much smaller role you're drafting for, and I would rather take that second swing at a different position that can make a bigger impact.
Yeah, I want to get back to the Jets here in a second. I want to kind of hit on just the AFC East in general and the way kind of things unfolded, because obviously directly affects the Jets. It's half their schedule or whatever, 33% of the schedule, whatever it is. I liked Miami's draft outside of Chop Robinson at 21. I don't know. There was just other guys I would have taken there, and I felt like Chop's like a guy that might be fun and might be good, but like, does he have any plan when he's rushing the passer other than just like, this, I'm going to be faster. There's that. I think New England, I thought, actually had a really nice week, a nice weekend. I like Drake May better than Jaden Daniels. So by default, that has to be a better pick. Plus I liked Polk and, you know, and some of the receivers they picked up. I think they drafted Baker too, didn't they? Am I making that up?
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to the Bills, I'm not a huge Keon Coleman guy. I've been burned. Basically, because I was a slow big receiver, so I usually am biased towards them, but I've been burned by those guys before. The Bills draft to me was like, yeah, like Dwayne Carter, and like, it's fine, and the Bills are good, but I know it's stupid, but trading back with a team that you can't beat and giving them a guy who you know is going to score a touchdown for no reason on you in the AFC divisional round, like,
we took it all, we brought them to our land, an endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
For a 6-round pick, not worth it. So I thought Miami had the... I mean, New England had better weekends than Buffalo. I just didn't love Chop Robinson. I guess, what would you make of the AFC East, kind of the other three teams in the division? I know it's probably a tough question.
I really liked Miami's draft. I think that's underrated. So Chop Robinson at 21, I think that's actually decent value. It's not like a steal or anything, but I think so. Chop Robinson
needed an edge rusher. Everyone else is hurt.
Yeah. Chop Robinson, to me, belonged closer to the big three edge rushers in this draft, right? Latu, Dallas Turner, and Jared Verse. He belonged closer to those three than, like, the rest, right? And I think this is what we're seeing reflected. And it was weird. Like, the pre-draft process, the narrative on the Penn State guys, for some reason, they all sank. Like, when we started all this, it was Chop Robinson was right up there with everybody else. And then just the longer we went, it's like,
Even Olu's the same thing. It was like, Olu might be tackle one. Is he even going to get to 10? And then it was like,
right.
J.C. Latham, Fuaga.
He was like 1 and 1A with Joe Alt. And then the longer we went, it's like, nah, he's tackle five. We're like, what are you talking about?
What the fuck happened?
And the draft didn't manifest that way, right? It's like the NFL just didn't listen to any of that, and Chop Robinson and Fashanu went where they were supposed to go in January. It's like, I think that's what we saw. So look, Chop Robinson is stupidly twitchy. He's stupidly athletic. Okay, he's less developed than some of these other guys, but he's also crazy productive at that. Like, he doesn't have the pass rushing plan, certainly, that somebody like Latu has. But he still has crazy production, like back-to-back seasons with a PFF pass rushing grade of 91. Dude, I'll take the twitchy athlete that's already crazy productive and we'll figure something out. Like, I think that's fine value where they got him. And I like a bunch of the other players they got as well. Patrick Paul, a lot of people see that as a reach, but he's the developmental tackle in the second wave that I would have grabbed as well for similar reasons.
Every one of those wave two tackles, no matter where they go, is probably going to be a reach. It's why they're a wave two tackle. Right. But like, someone's got to take a shot on these guys, and like Miami did that. They needed help.
And the difference between him and the rest of them is that, again, he already has really good production. Like, he has crappy technique and gets himself into trouble, but it's still really productive. Like, doesn't there's all these clips out there where it's like, oh, look at all these bad reps of Patrick Paul and sloppy technique and bad footwork and bad hand placement and all this sort of stuff. Most of them are wins. Like, most of the reps, he's winning. It's like, okay, if he's got that bad a technique and he's still winning 80% of the reps, what happens when we fix his technique? Like, I'll take that as a risk. So that made sense to me. Jalen Wright, you know, adding more ridiculous explosiveness to a team that's already stuffed full of it. Muhammad Kamara, same thing, like ridiculous twitchy athlete in the fifth round. Malik Washington, again, similar to the Jets. They found a skill set that isn't there really in the rest of that receiving core. We get a full sort of pure slot underneath type of guy. Add that. So I like their draft. New England, it's all about Drake May, right? And the receivers they added as well. But their thing is going to be, it was the choice. Do you draft the quarterback at three, or do you trade out and try and build the infrastructure first and then come back for the quarterback later or the second round or next year? They went with the quarterback. And okay, they added a couple of receivers that'll help. But the receiving core is still lacking a number one superstar guy, right? Like, if the Patriots now manage to swing a trade for Brandon Ayuk, the receiving core is transformed. Without him, it's like there's eight Jalen Polks on that roster. And then the offensive line still looks like a real concern. And they cut the starting left tackle like yesterday. So that's my concern with the Patriots. They got a quarterback. They got a reasonable looking receiving core and what looks like a rough looking offensive line. I don't know how that's going to hold up in year one. The Bills, man, the whole wide receiver thing is the story of the Bills draft. As you said, I wouldn't have picked up the phone if it was Kansas City. Like, I just wouldn't. I know it's, you know, your head says, look, you do what you think is best. You think you're probably going to get your guy anyway. Trade down. What does it matter? It's Kansas City. The last time you traded with them, they got Patrick Mahomes. I just wouldn't do it. I'm not taking that phone call. If it's anybody else, I'll listen. If it's Kansas City, no, not a chance. And the other thing is, when they traded down twice, so number one, I think four wide receivers went off in between the two picks that they ended up starting with and ending with for two trades. And it's not like they were getting trade offers that were too good to turn down. Like, our PFF sort of trade simulator was basically making each one of them a coin flip. So they could easily have stayed where they were and it wouldn't have made much difference. So that was interesting. Number one, voluntarily trading out of a spot that had a wide receiver available. In fact, had all of them. Trading down twice for not much and picking a wide receiver again. And then identifying Keon Coleman as the guy who's the fix is fascinating. Now, I love Keon Coleman, but I can't rationally articulate why. He reminds me a lot of Rashee Rice last year, where my heart liked him more than my head did. And he's one of those guys where you watch his tape, you like it, and then you look at your notes and like 80% of them are bad. You're like, this doesn't make any sense. What is going on here? And last year I was harsh on Rashee Rice because I went with the head. I went with the notes and I was like, it's too scary. I'm out. And the Chiefs drafted him. And obviously he's been pretty good other than, you know, then racing a Lamborghini, which isn't ideal. So Keon Coleman, I've been a little bit more high on him this year and saying, all right, I'm going to stick with my gut a little bit. But Matt Harmon of Reception Perception did a really interesting video on him the big dynamic with Keon Coleman is he does not separate against man coverage at all. He's like, he's literally in the lowest percentile PFF charts for separation against single coverage, but he separates quite well against zone coverage. And he's actually really good when you watch his tape at finding those gaps, at separating late, taking a step forward, all those kinds of things. So what Matt Harmon identified is that guys that fit that profile, effectively, the number one, they're mostly bad in the NFL, but the ones that do succeed fall into two different categories. They're either big slot receivers, right? Guys like Tyler Boyd. I forget who else was on that list. Juju Smith-Schuster was one, but guys like that, or they're like weirdly hit or miss vertical deep threats. Guys like Will Fuller, DJ Chark, you know, those. So obviously he's not that because he runs a 4.6, right? That's not his game. But he could easily become that big slot type of option for you. That's not what the Bills need. Like, they have a ton of slot receivers. They're different slot receivers, but, you know, Khalil Shakir, Curtis Samuel, even Dalton Kincaid, the tight end, they're all slot options. They need an X wide receiver. They need to replace Stephon Diggs. That is not what Keon Coleman does. So I find it really strange that Buffalo identified him as the fix and then didn't double dip, didn't come back for a wide receiver anywhere else. And even in the undrafted free agent pool, they only grabbed like a couple of guys. It's not like they went and also draft six, you know, grab six undrafted free agents just to cover ourselves. Like, they really went Keon Coleman is the answer. End of story. And I find that, number one, I find it fascinating. Number two, I think it's wildly risky because of the type of receiver he is.
Yeah, the thing with Coleman is, like, if you want to go by the GPS stuff and, like, yeah, he was, you know, the miles per hour and all that stuff, like, he looks really good. But, like, I don't know. I just – there's something about him that's, like, super fun to watch. And there's also some stuff, as you mentioned, where you're like, dude, what is – like, what am I watching right now? Like, this is not – I know, like, he's obviously a sick athlete, right? You, like, you don't go to be on Michigan State's basketball team and all these different things if you're not a sick athlete, 20-plus miles per hour and all that stuff. But then there's other times where I'm like, you look so slow. And it's like, as someone who played it slow and, like, the big, like, try to be 50-50 ball all the time, like, I don't know. I just, like, Rome Odunze looks slower than, like, his 40 time. But everything else about Rome was so polished, and the route tree, and every – you feel like he came down with every single pass and, like, you know, millions of touchdowns, et cetera. I didn't feel that with Keon Coleman. I just – as you mentioned, like, I don't know. How are they going to – like, when they play the Jets twice a year, I guess you're going to try to attack the middle of the field, but are you just going to swarm the middle of the field because you don't want to throw at the outside corners? Shakir, Kincaid, Knox, there's a million guys that are now just going to populate that middle of the field. Plus James Cook, like, you know, attack the outside at all. Josh Allen's got this big arm. It's not like he's a guy who just throws over the middle of the field the entire time. It's not, you know, young Tom Brady where it's like, we're just going to attack, you know, the 5 to 15. I don't know. I just, to me, felt like a weird use of assets. I agree with you on both Miami and New England. I wanted to ask you about just like general draft, and I want to have one question on kind of expectations now. I want your opinion on the Penix situation, because I think the difference in opinion, I haven't seen many people support the pick other than Dan Orlovsky, but there's been a few. And then just, was there the Brock Bowers to the Raiders pick, to me, are the two picks in the draft where it was like, love the player, and like, I kind of get what you're doing, but also feel like Atlanta's defense needed help so bad and they're in a win now mode. And then the Raiders, you need a quarterback. You didn't get up for a quarterback. And then like, you could have used defense or offensive line help or receiver help. And I just felt like going with Bowers when you just drafted Mayer, the top 40 pick, felt like a weird use of assets. I don't know. Again, it's not anti-Brock Bowers. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, the Raiders pick is conditioned with the knowledge that they didn't get a quarterback again, right? It's like for the second year in a row, albeit with different regimes, they feel like the one team that was left without a quarterback when the music stopped playing, right? And that conditions how you view everything. If you didn't know they needed a quarterback and you're like, all right, they have all these needs, defense, offensive line, you know, wherever, and they went Brock Bowers, nobody would have a problem with it. And I still, from that perspective, I think it's fine, right? Brock Bowers is a potentially, you know, if you were writing a big board that didn't care about position value, Brock Bowers would be the first or the second name on it this year. So from that perspective, to get him where they did, I have no problem with it. And I think he can coexist in an offense with Michael Mayer, even if Michael Mayer turns out to be amazing. I don't have a problem with that. I think you can create that system. Both those guys can eat. It's cool. It's just that we know they didn't get the quarterback, so it feels crappy. What was the other? Oh, the Michael Penix Jr. thing. So I wouldn't go as far as defending it. I don't think it's a good thing to do, but I don't hate it. And I think most of the criticism about it is kind of silly. Like, it's not like, and smart people are doing this as well. Like, I saw Mina Kimes railing against it and saying it's incoherent and it doesn't make sense and it doesn't tally with what they're doing. I don't think that's true. Like, I think you can plan for now and the future at the same time without it being contradictory. Like, the Chiefs didn't trade away Tyreek Hill because they thought that gave them the best chance to win next year. They traded away Tyreek Hill because they thought that gives them the best model for sustained success over the next 5 years, right? And they were good enough that it wouldn't hurt them next year. So the Falcons looked at this and they said, all right, we need a quarterback. The situation was terrible last year. We need a guy this year. Let's go get Kirk Cousins. He's the only really high-level veteran available. And they did. They got Kirk Cousins, and that should secure them the favorite point, the being favored for the division for the next 2+ years, right? But they also are aware Kirk Cousins, 35 years old, coming off an Achilles. Like, what is the future plan? Because that's not a long-term thing. And they love Michael Penix Jr. And so if your criticism about it is it's a reach, they don't see it that way. And a bunch of other teams in the league didn't either, right? So there is a risk to reaching relative to the consensus board. And I think he was number 31, 32 in the consensus board. So if you're using that, it's a reach of like 20+ draft picks. But multiple NFL teams were going to take Michael Penix Jr. before the end of the first round. So at the very minimum, it's an NFL consensus against the outside public consensus, at which point I think you can say, all right, that's fine. It's not a reach. Really, the big criticism is it's number 8 overall. So it's you're weighing what is the orderly succession plan worth. Like if this is a Jordan Love thing, and this has happened, you know, multiple times before, Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes was only a 1-year thing, but the same kind of idea. Like it's that's what they're chasing, right? If we get the guy, we think there's value to developing him on the sideline for 2 years, and then he's good to go because we think he's amazing. If they achieve that, it's literally balancing. Is that worth more or less than whatever defensive player we would pick at number 8 overall? And at the very minimum, I think you can argue it is. We know quarterback is insanely invaluable. It's the most valuable thing you can do. And even if you're burning 2 years of the rookie contract, which is the best value of it, it's still worth it, right? So at the minimum, I think you get what they're doing. You see the argument and it makes sense. And they've just determined this part is more valuable than this part. Now, I don't think I'd have done it, even knowing all those things. But I don't hate it. Like, I don't think, and I think most of the arguments against it are slightly silly. So I think that's where I come down on it. Like, I get the move. I think it's fine. It's entirely justifiable. And most of the hysteria about it is kind of crazy.
The one thing I would say where I don't hate the idea of what they did, I just don't like the player they went with, because I felt like I like Penix better than JJ McCarthy, but I actually felt like if you were going to go the developmental 2 years of Kirk Cousins and have a succession plan, I felt like JJ was the guy you take because he's younger, probably needed time to like sit in the NFL. Like I think JJ is best if he doesn't play at all this year or even doesn't play until the end right. of the year. And I feel like Penix is one of the guys that you like, even maybe more than a Drake May, like him, Jaden and Caleb were like, they've played a gazillion snaps, obviously Bo Nix as well. But I felt like for Penix, it was like Minnesota was the perfect place. We found out Minnesota wanted to get him. Look, you guys, to your point, Seattle kind of had the same idea that, you know, that Atlanta did. They have Geno Smith there. They tried to trade up for Penix into the top, you know, in the top 10, it got reported. So clearly they weren't the only other team. New Orleans as well, it looked like, I'm pretty sure. Like, again, Derek Carr's locked in there for 2 more years. Sucks to be a Saints fan, unfortunately, with that. But it is what it is. So again, like I get your point there, and I actually kind of agree. I just felt like I would love to go like the highest possible upside guy there, just because that's what kind of felt like. You know, I've heard a couple teams. The Jets have said this year. We've heard Atlanta. We've heard multiple teams. We want to go with this Packers model, and it's a lot of teams that have had horrible right. stretches drafting quarterbacks. I think Trevor Sikkema made this point. I was listening to something him and Connor were doing. I guess it was on Stock Exchange. And it is an interesting point, and it's going to sound like they were hating on Jordan Love, and they weren't. They were like, are we sure we want to, like, put all the eggs in the Jordan Love basket that, like, oh, he's 100%, like, set now just after 1 year? And the beginning of the year was pretty awful, and I got hot-taked by Jordan Love Twitter the other day for a tweet I had in September when he threw 3 picks. So I'll own it. Sorry, I thought it was a shitty pick after he didn't play for 4 years. But it is a curious decision of just, like, using Jordan Love potentially. If you want to use Mahomes and Rodgers and these guys and the new norm of the NFL where it's going to be come back to probably have a guy sit for a little while, I'm good with it. I did just laugh, and it was like, hey, are we sure we want to do like Jordan Love's the new standard for drafting a quarterback after one pretty good year and a sneaky playoff run?
Yeah, I mean, we are just sort of assuming that he's going to pick up where he left off last year, and that is who he is. But I think, you know, absent of additional information until then,
I'm just saying,
I'm kind of willing to go with it until we see otherwise. But I think so. The one area I would say, so a lot of people are like, the biggest problem with it is he's 24 years old. There's no upside. I think this assumes that there is value to the year or two of sitting on the sideline and learning, regardless of who the quarterback is, right? Like, I think we have a tendency to assume that ceiling is dictated by how raw the guy is and how young he is, right? If you get a really raw guy who's 20 years old, that guy's ceiling is through the roof. It's like, well, it probably isn't, right? The guy that's 24 years old and a better player right now, if he's got all the other tools, his ceiling's probably higher. Like, the fact that he's older doesn't really make much. The only thing age matters in, I think, is evaluating sort of how much of his college production is because he's just older, more experienced, and beating up on kids, right? I don't think it's actually relevant necessarily to where his ceiling is. So for the Penix thing, and I agree, like, a lot of this is conditioned by just how good you think Penix is, period, right? This is our own individual evaluations of him relative to the Falcons. But they're looking at this and saying, this guy has the arm. He's got, apparently, he runs a 4.4, which nobody saw coming necessarily. Like, he's got the arm. He's got the physical tools. He's got, like, the deep ball. Like, all that's there. And learning the NFL game is a totally different thing anyway, right? So if he gets 2 years of seasoning, we can get the best version of Michael Penix out there. And that's where we have success. So it's all just, that's their assumption. And it really doesn't matter that he's 24. It certainly doesn't matter for, like, you know, he's too old by the time he plays. Like, if this works out, Michael Penix Jr. probably starts his first game or has his first game as the starter when he's 26 years old. If he plays for 10 years in the NFL, you know, 36, that's perfectly reasonable these days. You get 10 years of succession plan. That's fine, right? If that's the way it works out, the age is irrelevant. And I think that's the idea, is they're not looking at this like the guy with the highest ceiling is clearly the 21-year-old, because it isn't necessarily true. They think that there's the 2 years learning from the sideline is just the best way of maximizing the success of whatever quarterback it is. And that, like, at the, like, that's the gamble they're taking, because there's not, like, there's definitely bits of evidence to point to that Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, blah, blah, blah. But we still don't know. It's still like a handful of guys, and just they've all gone one way for a while. It doesn't mean that that's actually true. And if it isn't, then it was a total waste of time.
Yeah, no, look, you know, the Commanders back in the day when RG3 and Kirk, and, like, you could argue that people should keep doing that. There's the argument you should always take a day three quarterback because eventually one will hit, and these different organizations do that. Last two questions here. One football-related one. I'm going to ask you a soccer question because biggest game of the season for my boys today. I guess this is, again, this question is so stupid in some senses because the offseason is technically not done yet, but where do you put this Jets roster up against the rest of the league? Mike Clay had his graphics out. He puts out, you know, for ESPN. Again, the Jets is the fourth best roster in the league. Some people have them lower. Some people, I guess, have them higher. And, like, what is realistic? I don't have a vested interest in a Jets game every week kind of expectations, or where should the bar be for this team? From my perspective, I do think this roster is, like, just on paper, just by name value and production and love, like, where they're really good, is a really, really, really damn good roster. We don't know about the head coach. We don't know about Rodgers' health. So those are all real caveats, but just roster-wise. And then expectations, I think they need to be in at least the divisional round. I think they need to win at least a playoff game for this regime to be back. If not, I don't know. Is Rodgers retiring and Saleh and Douglas are fired? Because, like, they've been here for a really long time now, and they've not made the playoffs. Everyone knows I love a good presidential reference. Like, Obama had, like, not any gray hair and was in, like, year two of his first term as president last time the Jets were in the playoffs. John Terry was Chelsea's captain in his prime, like, at this point. Like, Ronaldo's basically just leaving Man United. Like, we're talking a very long time ago. So I guess, where does this roster rank for you? And then what's, like, a realistic expectation, I guess? You know, again, we're still in April here, you know, for this Jets team.
I think it's still a really good roster. I mean, it, you know, it's in the same area as it was previously, which is the roster's good enough to win. It's good enough to win in the playoffs. It just needs the quarterback to do it. So you assume Rodgers coming in, if it works the way it was supposed to, they should absolutely be a playoff team. And you're right, they should be winning playoff games. Like, they should be a contender. This roster is good enough, I think, to be a Super Bowl contender. Now, that's also true for half a dozen other teams in the AFC. So it might not work out that way, right? Like, the Bills, for years have been good enough to be a Super Bowl contender. They still haven't actually got to one, let alone won one. So I put them in the same kind of category. Like, they can win the division, they can win playoff games, but they are one of a number of teams for whom that is true.
Yeah, no, if the Jets go sign Justin Simmons in July, like, now I'm going to be like, dude, you literally probably have to go in a title, because now you're like, not talk about win now mode. You're like in like four times double win now mode. I still think they'll end up signing one of like MVS, Simmons, Quandre Diggs. Like, they'll sign one more guy where we're like, oh, that's an interesting piece for different varying reasons. Bayern Munich, Real Madrid today, Dortmund, PSG tomorrow. I am a diehard Bayern fan. We're playing the most corrupt club in the world. I'm still very salty about 2017. It's the biggest shambles of refereeing. I don't even want to hear about Barca-Chelsea from back in the day. That was – Casemiro didn't get sent off. He gave away a penalty and had five fouls that were worth it. A red, let alone a yellow. Who do you like in both matchups? I know only some of the people that watch this podcast care about soccer, but the Messi and the Ibra jerseys in the background, I had to ask somebody who also actually gives a shit about the world's biggest sport.
I feel PSG probably make it from that side. As a Liverpool fan, I've been scarred too many times by Real Madrid to ever bet against them. So I'm particularly in the Champions League. So I'm going to assume Real Madrid make it through until given evidence otherwise.
Yeah, no, look, Florentino Perez, man, I don't know what he pays these refs, but whatever it is, and whatever the voodoo, he gave his soul for them to just every time. It's glorious. If you're a Real Madrid fan, if not, appreciate you obviously hopping on. Make sure you guys catch Sam out, obviously on Twitter, PFF NFL pod, and a million other things. Sam, appreciate you hopping on, and we'll do this again before camp starts.
Sounds good. Take it easy.